Welcome back, guys. DGS, KMOX, a few minutes past 2 p.m. Going to talk to our friend, attorney Brad Young. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
Brad, before we get to the Supreme Court cases, have you looked into the Waffle House case yet?
The Waffle House case. You know, I have not.
Okay.
Would this be brought by Freddy the German?
No.
Okay.
I can walk you through it, though. It's fairly simple. In Florida, an 84-year-old man was walking by a Waffle House, and then he looked toward the window, and there was an oversized poster of a strawberry waffle, and he was so distracted that he wasn't watching where he was going, and he fell, and he hit his head, and now he is suing for $300,000.
Oh, wow. Two words come to mind: comparative negligence. In most states, including Missouri, if you're at fault up to like 50%, if a jury finds you're at fault up to 50%, then you get nothing. And in this instance, I would think the comparative fault would be quite high, unless they're doing 3D holograms of delicious waffles that really just you could not look away. I'm thinking he's not going to do very well at trial.
Is there anything like this? Like, can you think of anything that a business could put up that would be so distracting they could be liable for it?
Well, I mentioned like a 3D hologram. We're not quite there yet, but you know, I always have this when I get into my car in the morning and I start driving, my car says a big message comes on the screen on the media screen of my car, and it says, "Warning, do not take your eyes off the road."
Right.
And every morning when I get in my car, I think, well, the only darn reason my eyes are not on the road, you buffoon, is because you're telling me not to take my eyes off the road.
Guys, in other news, Brad has a television in his car, just so you know.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's only a 30-inch screen.
Well, in that case, you're
no
fine.
Big deal. So let's talk about the immigration cases. Take them in whatever order you want.
Well, there's a couple of these that came out. Today was a big day for Supreme Court cases. The one was talking about asylum seekers. And what's interesting is I think this one was a pretty easy call. It was a 6-3 decision. But under U.S. law, 8 U.S.C. 1158, it specifically states any alien who is physically present in the United States may apply for asylum. And the question is, if you're still in Mexico, but you're not in the United States, can you still apply for asylum? And interestingly enough, and I think politically this is interesting, because the policy of turning away people in Mexico before they get to the border, that actually was started under the Obama administration. And it was continued under Trump 1. Biden changed it. He said, no, we're going to go back to allowing asylum seekers to apply even when they're not in the United States. And then Trump reversed that. So this has been litigation that's been going on for 10 years on this case, dating back to 2016. And the Supreme Court ruled you cannot apply for asylum until you're actually physically in the country.
And Brad, what was the argument of the dissent?
Yeah, the dissent's argument was essentially by saying if you make it where you have to be in this country, then all the administration has to do is to post security guards 5 feet from the asylum and from the border in, say, for example, Mexico. And then if you can't get past the guards, then you're effectively prevented from applying for asylum.
I don't know about you guys. This one seems to make sense to me that borders are borders. And Brad, remember Elian Gonzalez and the thing, like if your footprint was wet or dry. And,
yeah.
I mean, at some point you have to draw a line. And if you're in Mexico and you're seeking asylum in the United States, I'm open-minded, willing to listen to arguments. But, I mean, it seems to make sense. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I never understood. I'm open to like hearing other points of view, but the idea that you had several checkpoints where you could have sought asylum and you're waiting for the United States, I always thought that's interesting that's being allowed to happen if we are having this crisis at the border.
Yeah.
But I see this as really just a statutory interpretation. The statute says that. Congress passed it, I think, in the 60s.
Right.
And it was signed into law by the president. So I mean, I don't see this as really being a political story. The statute says what it says. And if you're going to disagree with the statute, then you're essentially saying, yeah, well, we don't really want to apply the words of the law. And so I don't see it as that tough of a call.
And what's the other immigration case?
The other immigration case is, I think more interesting, really. And because two countries, Haiti and Syria, they had what's called a TPS, temporary protected status. And that meant that they could stay in the United States without having to go through all of the process that's designed to stay here legally because they had protected status. From looking at the case, Haiti was given the status in 2010 after an earthquake, Syria in 2012, and every year it's been extended. Trump didn't extend it. Mm-hmm. So the question was, could the president unilaterally cancel it? And again, though, here's what's interesting in the statute. I actually looked up the statute. None of the stories that you read contain the actual statutes, right? So I looked it up, and the statute here specifically says there is no judicial review of any determination of the secretary that's within the executive branch with respect to the designation, termination, or extension of a designation. So in essence, Congress again said, we're going to give this all to the executive branch of the government to handle. We don't want to have anything to do with it. So if in the statute it says there's no judicial review, then, you know, the statute says what it says. Now, we can argue about whether Congress should ever do that. In fact, I would be hesitant to say Congress should ever do that. But that's what they did. It was signed into law. The president terminated the temporary protection status, and the court ruled 6-3 that that's non-reviewable.
So, Brad, this next question is much more political than legal, but I'm just curious if the Republicans have been able to remove a sufficient number of illegal immigrants that business owners are beginning to squeal because they don't have workers.
Boy, I have seen stories even as recently as yesterday still talking about that this is a concern. But what I've not seen, Dave, is what you just mentioned. I've not seen any hard data as to whether or not that is actually happening. I've just seen the policy arguments about it being a concern. So apparently there's no hard data on that as of yet.
Interesting. And I don't know this case very well, but just the headline sort of punched me in the gut about Monsanto and Roundup.
This is big for the Missouri area. What the Supreme Court said, and here was the issue. A guy from Missouri, he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He sued Monsanto, and he sued under Missouri labeling requirements on hazardous products. And he won. He won in court. He won at the U.S. or the Missouri Supreme Court. And then he goes up to the Supreme Court because Monsanto, now Bayer, didn't want to pay it. And the reason why they didn't want to pay it is because of this. Federal law right now dictates for this exact product, Roundup, what the labeling should be. And so this is your classic question of if the federal government has exercised authority in a certain area, then state law cannot contradict it. So what the Supreme Court said, 6-3 again, was what they said was, is that if federal law supersedes state law because they've already decided legislatively what the labeling should be on this product, you can't add additional labeling requirements under state law. And this affects the vast majority of all these lawsuits against Monsanto because they've all been brought under various state law labeling requirements, which now the Supreme Court said are invalid.
So not to just dumb it down, but couldn't someone bring a cause of action saying that you created a product that gave me cancer and I don't care what you told me about it on the label? You can't do that?
Sure, but that the level of proof that would be required would be quite high. And then, for example, under federal law, it doesn't require this product, Roundup, to state this may cause cancer. So if you could actually prove that it did cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, then I think you would have a direct causation basis to file a lawsuit. But that's not what most of these lawsuits did, because proving a direct causal connection is very, very difficult. But arguing that you failed to warn is much easier because then you don't have to prove that exact same level of causation.
So the law's the law, but did the bad guys win in this one? Did they like successfully defend what they're trying to defend, I guess?
Well, I don't know that anybody's the bad guy here, but even if you look at Europe, Europe doesn't require the labeling requirements for Monsanto products or Roundup, and United States didn't either, and there's very sketchy evidence. And I think that this is more akin to 20 years ago, there was all of this litigation about breast implants and silicone breast implants, and I tangentially was involved in some of those in the 90s. On the defense side. And when you looked at the medical evidence was all from litigation hired experts. But then after a while, the real science caught up and showed that there was very little, if any, connection between silicone breast implants and medical conditions. So that's the problem with basing causation on litigation experts, because litigation experts are hired guns. You know, they say what you want them to say because you write them a check. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's actual science.
Yeah. Yeah, I had kind of forgotten about that. Like finding expert witnesses and deposing them and defending them in depositions was a big part of what I did as like a fifth year associate. And it always felt kind of dirty. Like you knew your guy was dirty, but the other guy's guy was dirty too. It's just that, you know, just facing off, it's kind of a farce. Because, you know, you go in and all the people there think it's all on the up and up. And there's certain ethical requirements, of course. But, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. Everyone knows, like, you found a guy who you can pay $10,000 and he's going to tell you, yes, the train shouldn't have killed your grandma. So,
exactly. And that doesn't mean that the science is real. So in this instance, going back to Roundup, I think if you had solid evidence that Roundup actually did cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I think at that point you could file lawsuits and wouldn't have to rely on the failure to warn argument. But I just don't see that happening at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. We'll take a break.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. DGS, happy Thursday. Kev, take it away. Talk about what you had on the Google Doc about seeing the world through different eyes.
Yeah, you know, the World Cup experience, like today we're seeing, you know, thousands and thousands of fans from the Netherlands in the streets of Kansas City wearing orange. They're all wearing orange. They're partying, dancing. There's music. These fans from all over the world are going to baseball games and they're line dancing through the stands and having a good old time. And they're going on social media, all of the platforms, and saying how great they've, like, what a great time they've had. Like they are saying things like, man, when I watch TV back home, they make it sound like America's a wasteland where it's just crime everywhere and people are angry. And, you know, and they said everything's been the opposite. And I know we have those same impressions of other places in the world. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we would stop, if we could somehow take the filters and just not have our views of the world go through the filters of television and social media specifically. Because I think the reason I'm picking those two more than something like radio is I think the visuals are a big deal in this, right? So when you're seeing pictures of crime scenes, when you're seeing, you know, police beatings, whatever you're seeing, like these things all happen. They're all real. It's not fake. But it's not like it's all that's happening. Whereas when you watch TV and you see this stuff or you go to social media, what gets the biggest ratings? What's this? I learned this in freshman year journalism 101. I'm not even kidding you. This is one of the first things the professor talked about was if it bleeds, it leads. And that's been an axiom since before then. I mean, it's probably been an axiom in TV news for as long as TV news has existed. Because they know that fear and anger get the most attention. And that's happening all over the world on TV and on social media. What gets engagement on social media? It certainly isn't just the happy story of a fan from the Netherlands having a great time in Kansas City. That's not going to make news, but it's happening, and it's probably happening 1,000 times or more for every bad experience someone has. And I wonder if it's even possible now to get past those lenses that we're seeing things through, right? Like our visions of other parts of the world, their view of us. And the person, another person was making this comment, like, you know, the countries anywhere, they're not the problem. The people are not the problem. The leadership, the politicians are the problem. That's what generates a lot of the news that you see. And everybody's just looking for political capital rather than looking to solve problems or to fix things. It's not so much about fixing it. It's about having something to campaign on. And again, not just here. This same dynamic, we're hearing from Europeans that are saying, when we see the news about the United States on TV, it looks terrible. And it's all negative, and it's everything's mean, and everybody's fighting and angry. And we get over here, the food's good, the people are super friendly, the stadiums are gorgeous, we're having a great time. And that's not the vision that we get. Like, that's what they're saying is, this is not the vision of the United States we get. And I know we get the same thing. We see the world through those lenses.
And our own world.
Right.
Our own country.
Exactly, right. And those lenses, though, are intentionally skewed to the negative, because that's what keeps eyeballs on the screen. And I don't know how we get around it is kind of the question. Like, how do you, I mean, people can spread the word like we're seeing with this, right? People are all over Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, talking about how much fun they're having from all over the world. And the people that follow them will see it. But then they'll also watch TV tonight and they'll see the same lenses that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. How do you get around it?
I think the only way to get around it is individuals are all going to have to make the decision to stay off of their screen more. Because I do think the average person is more addicted to their screen than we want to admit, than they want to admit. And I do think we're reaching a point where people are like, I spend a lot of time staring at my phone. I spend a lot of time scrolling. I lose a lot of time to that. And then on top of it, it's bringing so much negativity and so much like propaganda, or even if everything you're watching is like fun and happy, it's taking you away from your actual life. So I don't know if there's anything we can do in mass. I really don't. I think it's just more and more people have to realize I got to focus on what's actually happening in my community instead of focusing on what's entertaining me on my screen.
Yeah, this is kind of a different point, but I was watching the game last night. And Rach, where we sat the other day in the green seats, you're on television a lot. And every time they showed the crowd, at least half of them were looking at their phone. They're sitting 18 feet behind home plate, and they're looking at the phone.
Jocko says yes, and I believe that's fine.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave, how are you today?
Not too bad. So yesterday we had Bill DeWitt III on the show, and I was asking him Dave questions, and I'm not sure he'll be back on.
I was going to say you guys are best friends now.
No, he actually, he really laughed, and then he gave Wheels, I thought,
really great
the
answer.
Most interesting answer of the interview. Which was like, I said, take us behind the curtain, you know, like, what do you guys know that we don't know? And does it bother you when people go off on your family for not caring? And he said, he's like, I get it. I understand why fans get frustrated, but they don't know what I know. And I find that to be an interesting thing.
Well, I feel like we hear that from Ollie a lot. It's like, you know, he'll talk about some criticism he's getting, and it's like, yeah, but did they know A, B, C, D, E, F, G? And it's just, it's part of leadership, isn't it? I mean, everybody loves to, you know, talk about what the king and the president is doing wrong, but what, you know, they don't know what he knows. And so it is very true. That's the case. And, you know, I have great confidence in him. And by the way, I have confidence that he would be a much better, and I'm not abdicating, a much better golf partner with you than I am, because he's a way better golfer and probably
he?
A better teacher.
Is my he
theory,
really?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I think he's a scratch golfer, I think.
Wow.
How about that?
That's good.
Rick, you know what I was doing yesterday at 10:30 a.m.? I was taking a golf lesson with our buddy Ed.
I figured that's what you were doing.
And he sold me a set of clubs while I was there. So,
I was playing at Whitmore and having kind of the time of my life. So I guess we were both doing the same thing. That's kind of you and I kind of being connected again, isn't it?
Very nice. I have a Dave question for you guys, and it's going to sound goofier than I mean it, but Jazz Chisholm was responding to the criticism that he's like, you know, eating lollipops and building sandcastles. And he said, come on, essentially we're all just playing a kid's game. And I've always found that very interesting. Do you guys think professional baseball players are playing a kid's game, or are kids playing a professional's game?
I'll let you go first, Kevin.
All right, I'll go first. The game was created by grown-ass men for grown-ass men, and kids imitate what grown-ups do. That's how baseball started.
I could not have said that better. Probably wouldn't have used all those vocabulary words you used. But here's the deal. I had it in my head and in my heart, so I might as well have said it. But here's the deal. It's like okay, you go to the CEO of Monsanto and you say, okay, you're finger painting with our corporate spreadsheet, you probably shouldn't be doing it. It's like, no, I like the finger paint because that's what kids do. It's like, no, this is not a playground for kids. It's not. It is not. You have to grow up and be a professional. In fact, on a different subject, and Kevin, I think you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, when I was watching the NCAA baseball championships, I was watching them on ESPN, I was appalled at the behavior of the fans at the game, and my conclusion was, it's professional baseball now because it's college, and college is professional now, but it's not very professional. It's not professionalism.
Right.
And at some point, you got to learn in any job. What's the right decorum? And basically, respect is at the bottom line of that. I mean, what he did is disrespectful to 23,000 people that have ever played the game of baseball, and that is unexcusable.
Yeah, and I think, that's a great way to put it, Ricky. And I think part of the problem is that literally anything can be a hobby to some people, but it's a profession to others. You know, if you're a musician, you're not just playing a child's game because kids can play music. You're an artist. You take it seriously. You're doing it for a living. I mean, it's the same idea.
Somebody's paying you a lot of money to be really good at it and to not kind of mess up your team kind of function, which he did. I don't know the guy, but the reality is, you know, that's not the kind of, you know, situation you want to put a big league player in, that either defend his teammate or kind of live with that. And it, you know, clearly screams that, you know, I'm just doing this for fun. Well, if you're doing it for fun, you can do it in a men's league in South County here in St. Louis. And there's a bunch of guys there, because they asked me when I was done playing, would you like to come and play in this league? And, you know, my arm didn't work anymore. I mean, those leagues work, Kevin, as we know, but that's not what this is. This is the big leagues. This is a professionalism.
If it's just for fun, why are you making $17 million a year?
Yeah, well, if it's just for fun, give your paycheck back. Exactly.
Right. I mean, it's your job, and act like you're at work. Have fun. You can have fun. We have fun at work, Ricky. But
we do.
You know, if I was sitting here chomping on food during a segment while we're talking, that would sound terrible, and it would be very unprofessional of me.
100%. And everybody, whatever profession you're in, it doesn't matter. You're a teacher, you're a nurse, you're a doctor, whatever you are. You know, everybody understands the code of ethics that comes with that profession and the training that goes involved in that military. Whatever it is, you know, you have your standards that are important to your people group, to the people that you work with and work for. And, I mean, that's just kind of how it is. And if people don't like that, well, then they can go do something else because, you know, again, it's vocation, not avocation.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah.
Those are great answers.
You hit a nerve, Dave.
Obviously, I did.
Yeah.
You hit a nerve with the shade you're throwing towards the men's leagues. I'll have you know that about half of the third baseman can get it to first base without a bounce.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I like that.
Okay. Rick, I know you were last night. I was last night. Wheels was last night. We're all pulling for Libby.
Yeah.
And it just, the same result.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, first three innings were great. And then the fourth inning, it caved in again, and he had a big inning. And, you know, he's going to have to figure that out. I mean, it's, you know, again, back to the professionalism thing, is nobody can figure that out but him. He's got people helping him. He's got a lot of people helping him. And he's a great dude. I love the guy. But, you know, it's a results-oriented thing. And, you know, to have that many bad starts in June is problematic for him personally, because you get, kind of bummed about that, but also for your team and for kind of the direction you're going. And the Cardinals need him. Let's put it that way. They need him. Cardinals, I think, by the way, a little bit of an aside from Libby, the Cardinals are at a crossroad right now, today. I would say today, because they are at the same record they were at last year today. Same exact record. And you could win a bar bet with that. But it's a fact. And so going forward from here, last year, things fell apart. And there were reasons for that. It was a different team, older guys, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm not saying this year is last year. This year is way more fun. It really is. But you need to keep the pedal down. And I think the Cardinals have done a good job of keeping the pedal down with the moves that they've made. But I feel like they're going to have to put the pedal down as an organization in terms of performance. And I think players are going to have to put the pedal down and say, we're not going back to where we were. We're going forward to where we're headed. And I think kind of today, in my mind, is a bit of a crossroads on that.
Ricky, is it too dramatic for me to say that I think the course of this season is entirely about the rotation? Because the way it's gone lately, we saw, not yesterday, but the day before, we saw the payback for a weekend where the starters didn't do their jobs because your best relievers weren't available in a nothing-nothing game in the ninth inning because they had to be used heavily over the weekend, and now you get another rough outing from Libby. And thankfully, Leahy's been really good the last two times. But I think that rotation is going to be the key. Can they protect the bullpen, and can they avoid those big innings that are killing them?
Yeah, I think you start with the rotation. You say, we still trust in these guys, and that's why we want Libby to succeed. Yes, and I would say need him to succeed. The backup to that kind of conversation is Hunter Dobbins, Bryson Motts, and Quinn Matthews. And so that's the plan B.
Right.
And I think you always need a plan B. I mean, at some point in the season, it's a long year. So I would say plan A and plan B both have to work. And so to me, that's, as John Rooney loves to say, you're only as good as that day's starting pitcher. And I think yesterday is a great example of that. If the Cardinals scored four runs on a given day, the way they did yesterday, we might say, that's enough. You win 4-2.
Right.
It's a great game. It's a great game. Great ninth inning. It was all good. But when you give up a nine spot, you're not going to win very often.
Yeah. So specifically with Libby, it's really hard to me. I know there's a lot of buzz. I get a lot of questions on social media, especially about whether or not he's tipping pitches. I'm having a hard time with that idea because he's fine the first time through. And I don't think guys just tip pitches more the deeper they go. I think if you have a tell, you have a tell. But there's got to be something, and it sure seems to me, Ricky, a lot of it is fastball command, that none of the fastballs work that well by characteristic, which means you got to spot them up, and they're just too many misses.
No, spotting them up is definitely part of it. I feel like with fastball, I did see him try to pitch inside more yesterday. I thought that was good, especially the first three innings. One thing I might differ with what you just said is I always think there's a big difference when somebody gets into the stretch. So you get a base runner on.
Okay.
Maybe there's tipping that goes on in that case because I don't know this, but I think when you get into the stretch and you always give up four runs or five runs then it's like, okay, then something's happening there, and maybe it's not even tipping. Maybe it's your mechanics aren't as good out of the stretch. That could be too. So I feel like that's an area, and I'm not a pitching expert, certainly on modern day pitching, I'm not by 100%. But I knew the old version of it. But I think the point is that would be something I would look at. Let's put it that way.
It's a good point. Very interesting. Yeah, because there are guys, Rick, where the report on them over years has been get them out of the windup. Get them in the stretch. Even if it's just a mental thing, that the thought 100%. Of holding the runners or whatever changes how well they execute.
Yeah, and sometimes you do too much. Back in the day, it used to be the guys would do the slide step too much, and they would lose their velocity. They wouldn't get their hips into it, and everything would be flatter. But so the reality is that he's going to have to figure that. He's going to have to figure out how to adjust faster. I think that would be another way to say it. And it's not that, again, he's not trying, and not he's a smart guy. He really is. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of got the program A, and when the program A is not working, you kind of go, uh-oh, where's he going with the next pitch? And it just snowballs. And, again, that's part of his development, but it's about time that next step happens for him. He needs it to. The Cardinals need him to get there.
All right, buddy. Hope you guys get the game in tonight. Have a great call. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. You bet. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. So not this weekend, but next weekend is the July 4th holiday, is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Just letting everyone know, I am taking off that Monday. I've been invited to the Taylor Swift wedding.
Oh, look at you.
So. Dave's actually walking Taylor nice. Down the aisle.
So I'll be able to report back.
Oh, that's good. So you get to do the honors as the, all right.
I think I am the distraction so that everyone shows up in Madison Square Garden to see me go to the wedding.
Right.
Yeah, and then they're in the Hamptons.
Right. They're actually going to be somewhere else.
So I think I'm kind of being used.
Yeah.
She's like that, you know. She's always...
Rich, that... do you care at all?
No. I mean, I'm lying. Of course I'm going to look at the pictures. Why am I lying? Why am I lying to myself?
I was like, yes, you do.
I do care. Yes, I will look at all of the pictures.
That's who's pup.
I'm not like trying to investigate and trying what
to learn more.
Yeah,
you're like, not going down the Reddit rabbit
hole. Yeah, like I'm not trying to predict anything or haunting any threads right now. But yeah, once the pictures come out, I would love to look at those.
Is it happening next weekend?
Yeah,
they have Madison Square Garden reserved.
Yeah, they have the streets. I guess
they have the streets blocked, and they have a permit to hold an event.
Okay,
can I just say, you suck if you're going to get married at Madison Square Garden.
Ooh, taking a stand.
Yeah.
If Metallica was getting married there, would you feel that way?
Yes. It's just too big of a flex.
Why do I find him so adorable?
I'm so important that I need to get married at Madison Square Garden. It's like, okay, just relax. You sing songs. It's good. You're great, but like, come on.
Well, won't it be sort of...
Plus, what does that do to the people?
Awkward and cavernous?
Well, it's going to be a terrible wedding. Yeah. Like, why would you not just pick like, the most beautiful...
Are they going to have 20,000 people there?
Right. I mean, I would guess it's a fairly small event.
What if it's a concert as well?
Well, it's not going to be any of those. I thought the whole thing was like they're having an after wedding event at that venue.
I didn't know that. Also too big of a flex.
That's like, to accommodate all the people who are coming to like the party part.
Oh.
And so they're going to have 20,000 whatever
people. But again, I don't know. Hot take, a place with that is like over half of it is like stands with seats in them. Like that's a terrible place to throw a huge party.
Mm.
To me, at least, it feels that way.
I don't know. I feel like that's just symbolic excess is what it is. Like that's why it's irritating to me. It's like, come on, man.
Let's be real.
Can you just not be normal?
No, she can't. She's a billionaire. She takes her private jet from Kansas City to like St. Louis, and it's a 30-minute flight. I mean, come on. Yeah. There was a report that just came out the other day that said she is the billionaire who has the biggest carbon footprint so far in 2026.
Well, I'm going to lump her in with all the other dumbass billionaires who do these big old flexes for no reason other than they can.
The thing about the, like, how are they going to use the space is going to look dumb. I will stand up for Taylor and Travis on this front. Taylor Swift has put on a million, like, arena concerts.
Yeah.
I think she's going to be able to work with the right people to make the space look exactly how she wants it to look.
And Travis has a master's degree in
interior
decorating.
Andrew makes a pretty good point, so. I think I'm going to go with Andrew over Taylor Swift on this
one. I would go with me.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm on Team Andrew here.
Rach, I am excited to see what her dress looks like and stuff.
Rach, what are peptides and do I need them?
I'm not sure exactly what a peptide is. I do put them on my face from time to time. I think they help regenerate your cells or something. I'm probably dead wrong. But they're a skincare step that I've used
in the past.
The
kids are all about them.
Well, I mean, there are lots of versions of it. That was a weird miss out.
You're having a day.
I am. I'm having a total day. But they're basically
only
just
virgins use peptides.
Yeah, they're basically.
You want to be cool? You can't use peptides. That's for virgins.
Yeah, it's used for a lot of different things.
Now don't laugh harder at him. I did the joke first. Now you're playing it on too thick. With
he
Andrew.
Just owns me.
It's like he didn't even hear me, and then Andrew does it. He's like, oh. Andrew.
I had to swoop in.
Oh, my God.
I was like, I'll end one this.
I think we got a fight over it.
They are short chains of amino acids.
Yeah, we know who won't be getting the little notes left around, Dave.
Oh, they do. The tissue repair, so they can help, like, regenerate.
There are a lot of different versions of it, right? There are people that can use them for, like, training for marathons. You can use them for bodybuilding. You can use them for... The hair growth.
I don't do any
like,
of those things.
They're all kinds of, I mean, basically they can be used for a lot of different therapies depending on how they're being used.
And you can inject them, right? Because I saw a guy that was like, I mixed mine in the same syringe and people were freaking out about him because like, I guess that can cause you to like explode or something.
Right.
You gotta be careful with all that stuff. Don't take your advice from people on TikTok when it comes to like anything you're injecting in your body. I can't believe I have to say that.
I know.
People on TikTok love injecting stuff.
They do.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of doing that. That sounds awful.
What?
Not the virgins.
Like like injecting stuff?
Yeah, it's fine.
I think there's a decent chance Wheeler says the F word by the end of the show.
I'll tell you what. No, I'll say floofenderfer the way I'm going today.